This is the Classic Auto Mall Show. Broadcast from the studios inside the Classic Auto Mall in Morgantown, Pennsylvania. Just 1 hour west of Philadelphia at Pennsylvania Turnpike Exit 298. Featuring nearly 1,000 classic, vintage, and barn find vehicles for sale under one climate-controlled roof. Now, here's your host, Classic Auto Mall President and the man with all the toys, Stuart Howden.
I wonder if my mother is rolling over in the grave when he says my name like that. Show number 140. Look at us.
Wow. Congratulations.
Yeah, well, congratulations to you as well, too. It's been certainly a ride.
Yes,
you
it
know?
Has.
It's pretty amazing that we've done this many, and we're, you know, we were just talking a minute ago about, you know, number of listeners. Boy, it's increased exponentially since we started.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nice that, you know, an hour-long video in today's world is an eternity, you
yeah.
know. When you see, what are the shorts on TikTok? What are they?
30 seconds, 60 seconds.
If yeah. that,
yep.
That's the attention span. That's what we used to call the MTV generation, but I don't think they call it that anymore.
Not anymore.
I don't think that's the correct terminology. So, how many cars would you guess we have in inventory now, Steve? Come on, you should do better at this.
I'm going to say 960.
Yeah, see, you're 20 off, 940.
Why is it?
I don't know. Well, because we get sometimes people take their car out to do repairs on them and stuff. So you don't always see when a car actually leaves or in the system that when it leaves.
Right.
So, but, you know, we've had a great sales week again. Where do we sell cars to? Moton, Pennsylvania, Rego Park, New York, Miami, Florida, Scenery Hill, Pennsylvania, Phelps, New York, Marvel, Tennessee, where I'm from, Carlisle, Pennsylvania, Wayne, Pennsylvania, Cato, New York, Albuquerque, New Mexico, Sunbury, Pennsylvania, National Park, New Jersey, never heard of that, Perkiomenville, Pennsylvania, New Market, Maryland, Liberty Corner, New Jersey, Chattanooga, Tennessee, I said that right, Peterborough, Ontario, Canada, West Newbury, Massachusetts, and Falls Church, Virginia. So a pretty busy week, and the consignments are really rolling in with the better weather. You know, we've had some decent weather and no rain, and you know, that's what slows down the consignments. Mm-hmm. If there's a threat of rain, it's like suede shoes. They just don't want to bring it out.
A lot of interesting stuff coming in as well. Some very nice Camaros and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, we got some great stuff. We'll talk about in segment four some of our new inventory. But first and foremost, we want to welcome our special guest today, Judy Stropas. Good morning, Judy. How are you this morning?
I'm well. Good morning. How are you?
Well, doing great. Glad to have you on the show, albeit we have you on Zoom. You must be home up in the northeast part of the world.
I'm in Connecticut, Ridgefield, Connecticut, and it's sort of a rainy, cloudy kind of day.
Well, it just left here, so it's on its way. It went to you, so we get it first, and then you get it as well. So it's a rare occasion for you to be home. I imagine you're traveling a lot these days, aren't you?
No, when you compared my travel back in the day when I'd be leaving every 3 days for a race, no, I don't travel that much anymore.
I understand. For those of you who don't know, Judy did timing for all kinds of interesting racing teams back in the day and scoring and was doing, gosh, IndyCar and Can-Am and SCCA and everything, right? I mean,
Le Mans, Daytona, around the world. Right. And we call it BC, before computers.
So. I like that, BC.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and of course, well-known. And you also raced cars as well, too, right?
Yes. Yes. I raced in the Volkswagen Cup, which was the Bill Stein Cup at the time, SCCA Nationals. It went to the runoffs. And vintage cars. Yeah, so I've raced quite a gaggle of different types of cars.
Sure. I mean, your bio says driver, racer, author, professional timer, scorer, and award-winning public relations person. that's a lot of stuff.
A lot of stuff. A lot of years.
Yeah, I saw a great advertisement, and I was just looking through my pictures here, and I couldn't find it. I had it here just a minute ago with you and your Volkswagen talking about taking a Sunday drive.
I thought that was in the 70s. I think that is one of the best ads ever.
I do too.
It says little ladies, not little old ladies, but ladies who drive on Sundays. Sundays at Watkins Glen, Sundays at Riverside, Sunday. That's what I thought. It was so well written. I've paraphrased it.
Sure.
But it's a great ad. I love that ad.
Yeah, I remember seeing that, I think, in Car and Driver or one of the publications back in the day, seeing that ad. And, of course, you know, it's funny because not only were women not very heavily involved in racing back then, but even did I read that in the Indianapolis 500, you had to get a special letter to actually go into the pit lane area and work for one of the teams?
That was in the 70s, and that's all been dealt with. That was when it was USAC, and women weren't allowed in the pits, and we weren't allowed in Gasoline Alley.
Right.
So it was 72 or 3 with the Penske team, and they finally allowed women who had jobs
right
into the garage.
Right.
So I have a letter that said that I am officially assigned to do certain jobs for the Penske team and I should be allowed in.
Wow.
So I have a photograph of myself holding that letter. And so we were allowed in. And about the same time, NASCAR also had that issue about not allowing women in.
Right.
And that was resolved as well. So that was all done in the 70s, and it's all good now.
Well, yeah. So luckily, we've come of a little bit more into the mainstream these days, and we don't have things like that, whether it be golf clubs or whatever else that were male only. It's kind of gone away. How about the Chowder Society? Was that male only back in the day, or was that open to everybody? That was open to everybody.
No. Anything to do with sports car driving,
right,
women were always involved,
right,
from day one. So when you have the Madison Avenue Sports Car Driving and Chowder Society, that's clearly sports cars. No, that was never an organization that was exclusive to men. Not at all.
Well, that's great to hear. That's an interesting – I used to read about that in Car and Driver back in the day as well. And it was always interesting because it sounded like such a – the place you wanted to be if you were a car person. And of course, those of us who lived in East Tennessee, it wasn't a hop, skip, and a jump to go there. So I imagine there was some lot of fun times had at those lunches.
Oh, they were great because that was at a time when sports car racing was really at its height with SEC Nationals, with Can-Am, Trans-Am. And it was the people invited. And that's why it was called Madison Avenue, because Madison Avenue is the home of advertising,
right,
advertising agencies. And so you had the ad people come in, ad people for Car and Driver. Car and Driver was in New York City at that time.
Yeah, right.
Popular. You had a lot of Sports Illustrated. You had a lot of magazines that were based in New York City. So it was where these ad agency people, Mad Men, as we know them,
right,
and sports car magazines could come and see different people, different race car drivers who would come into town and be interviewed. It was great.
Yeah, look,
before social media,
right,
before Zoom, before when everything was live.
Right. Well, the old pictures that you look at from all the gatherings there and all the different people that you see is fantastic. David Hobbs, and I imagine everybody that was anybody in racing was there at one point in time, right?
Right, and either their sponsor, I don't know if the Chowder Society had the money or the funds to bring them in, but usually their sponsors brought them in.
Sure.
I remember bringing in the drag races. I brought in Don Prudhomme when he was a Chevrolet driver, right, in NHRA, because I was covering NHRA for about 18 years. So I would bring them in, and Chevrolet would pay for that, obviously.
Right.
And it was a great opportunity to see people in New York City you wouldn't see otherwise.
Right. And people that you maybe had only read about for those of us, back in the day who didn't know. I mean, drivers were more accessible back in the, I remember going to tracks even in the late 70s and early 80s, and it was a little bit more accessible then than it is now, because it's a different world now, obviously. But do you follow racing currently? Is there any racing that you watch? Do you watch Formula One or IndyCar or any of that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're honoring Zach Brown at the International Motor Racing Research Center,
the CEO of McLaren.
Yes. And I sent the press release out the day after Lando Norris wins the race. And it was funny because I was originally going to send it on Friday, and it got delayed. So I sent it out Monday, and everybody says good timing.
Oh, yeah. Perfect timing. And of course, it's going to be in Corning, New York, which is just south of Watkins Glen, right?
Right, exactly. It's at the Corning Museum of Glass, which is a beautiful facility within the museum. And they have all the great audio, video facilities. It's just a great location. And so it'll be, even though it's a NASCAR weekend,
right?
Zach will be flying in between, I think there's a Formula One race in somewhere. And then there's an IndyCar race also the same weekend. So he's flying in and flying out. And,
oh, wow. Well, it's a great honor, and I'm sure you didn't have to ask twice for him to come.
Yes, I don't know. I don't know how that all transpired. It was brought in later.
Right. But, and so happy for Lando winning the race on Sunday. That was fantastic, wasn't it?
Fantastic. What a great strategy that they ran. It was terrific. And so Red Bull says, okay, so Max had a little problem when he hit the bullard.
Right. Yes.
And so the car wasn't running as perfectly. I don't know. It seemed to me, I was really expecting him to catch up, but he kept falling back and back.
Well, we've seen him start in 20th place and win the race. So, I mean, you know, being penalized and didn't seem to matter. And you hope that, I think that, you know, and we've been longtime fans of Formula One, but a lot of people in the U.S. are just now becoming Formula One fans. And I'm glad to see somebody else win, because I got to imagine that some people were saying, gosh, is this guy win every race? You know, and he has been.
Did you see how almost every driver came up to Lando at the end and was happy for him?
Yeah.
And there was an article this morning about that fact that everyone was congratulating him. The love for Formula One in the U.S. came from the Netflix series. I actually have not seen it because it's a long story, but but that has, I know people who are only peripheral racing fans and suddenly are into Formula One and are because of those shows. I'm on an airplane the other day and I'm watching, I was in the seat where I had to pull the TV out from under the seat.
Right.
So I didn't bother, but I knew China was on at a certain time and I had the time wrong in my head, but I look over in the seat in front of me. This young gal is sitting there and she's watching IndyCar live on ESPN on the airplane. And she's really into it. And she's looking at the scoreboard. I was so fascinated by that.
You know, that's so great. My wife even gets up and watches it. And she hadn't been a racing fan ever before, but Drive to Survive really got her interested. And then, of course, just learning about the different personalities. And like you said, all the drivers congratulating Lando. Even, I mean, Max was very humble in his loss. And, of course, as he said, you know, it's hard not to be, you know, I still came in second. It's not like I didn't finish, right?
Exactly right.
So
did a good job.
Yeah, it was amazing, and congratulations to McLaren and continued success for them, and great for Zach to be on getting the honor coming up. And when we return, we'll continue our conversation with Judy Stropas, and we'll talk about some other racing stuff and timing stuff and all that other cool stuff on the Classic Auto Mall Show. We'll see you in just a minute.
Whether you want to buy or sell a classic, collectible, or special interest vehicle, you need to visit the Classic Auto Mall website for more information. If you're looking to buy, you can easily search our inventory of more than 1,000 vehicles on the web at classicautomall.com. And if you'd like to know all the advantages of selling your car through consignment, the information's available on our website, or you can talk to a classic car specialist who can answer all your questions. It's easy, safe, and convenient. Plus, we sell worldwide. We're always adding new vehicles to our inventory, so make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow us on social media, and check our website, classicautomall.com.
Back with the Classic Auto Mall Show from the Classic Auto Mall Studios in Morgantown, Pennsylvania, with our friend Judy Stropas on the Zoom call with us, the modern technology of a conference call, I guess, right? God bless it. Don't have to travel nearly as much, right?
All right.
So back in the days when you started timing cars in races, basically there was no computers. There was no way to do it other than manually. You had a stopwatch. I imagine it was a pretty nice stopwatch. It was not just some cheapy one you got at Walmart, right? Or maybe it was.
Well, it would have worked fine, but it was a Hoyer. It was a Hoyer chronograph. And keep in mind, this was, I had a unique ability to time dozens of cars every lap with one watch.
Wow.
Where people say, well, didn't you use a clipboard with three watches? No.
Right.
Those three watches on a clipboard can time one car every lap.
Right.
My one watch, I can time dozens, however many are necessary. And you had to subtract. So you had to put the each time a car came by, you wrote the number, the time that that car came by, and then you subtracted the next time.
Right.
So you had to have everything in. So you could see in one of the photographs I sent you, if you use it, you'll see the sheets lined out in front of me. Mm-hmm. And I think at the time I might have been using the electronic button.
Right.
With the digital timer. But prior to that, it was a Heuer chronograph. It's the same watch that if you watch 60 Minutes on CBS.
Right.
It's exactly the same watch that I was using. Originally on the show, they had Heuer on the watch, but they eventually took it off. I think when marketing and advertising came into it, they took Heuer off.
Right. And now if you had, I read somewhere where you said if you had three cars together, you could get the first one and the second one, and then you kind of estimated the middle car. Was that?
Yes, you get into a groove as to how you estimate. You can estimate quite well.
Right.
And of course, I mean, we weren't, no watches would read to the thousandths of a second. There's no way.
Right.
Early on, we read to the tenth of a second.
Right.
The Heuer I had only read to the fifth of a second, but somehow I made it read to the tenth of a second.
Well, good for you. You know, it's funny how back in the day, people don't realize how complex things were to figure out as they are today. You know, we want to do a spreadsheet now and we want to add up 12 columns and we just hit a button and it does it automatically. What were they called? My dad used to do them. And he would do these like a spreadsheet, but handwritten with a pencil. And
I still do that. Yeah, I still do that. Believe it or not, I do all my books on that wall. I have my pencil, I have my sharpener there. I'm and always in pencil so you could erase. I have an eraser.
You and I.
This is probably 50 or more years old.
It's held up well. You and our friend Toby Ross. Toby loves to write things in pencil and then erase them. He's always got an eraser with him too. So and it's funny because there are so many people that are like that you talk to in today's world that say, look, I'm still very old school when it comes to, you know, keeping books, keeping records, keeping all of that. And it's so funny because, you know, modern technology will do everything. You watch a race today, it's crazy the analytics that you know about a particular car or driver.
Well, I wanted to show you, I do have pencils here, all the pencils I used during my timing and scoring days. And they were number three pencils. Here's one that's still in a relatively long.
Yeah, number three pencil.
Because you didn't wear out the points as quickly. This is during scoring and timing.
Right.
When you're scoring a race like a 24-hour race, you're constantly running.
How many pencils in a 24-hour race would you go through, or did you even ever keep track of that?
You know, I never counted them.
Would you, I guess every once in a while you'd get a little bit of a break if there was a separation between the cars, or no break at all?
No break at all. The only break was when they red flagged the race for I think rain or fog at Daytona one year. Yeah, that was it. It's not even a break. You have to be aware and alert for the restart. You can't even go to the bathroom because you don't know when they'll restart.
And did somebody bring you food? I mean,
I would have food. I wouldn't drink. I would have food. And ice cream was always very refreshing.
Oh, that's funny. And of course, back then, you know, the teams were all, everybody was so competitive, obviously, and everybody looked for an edge. And that information that you provided them could give them an edge over another team, right? So I bet everybody wanted your services back in the day.
Oh, absolutely. And I did. I originally started with Bud Moore Engineering because the Ford people found me at an event. And then Penske said, then it was the Javelin team with Jim Jeffords and Ronnie Kaplan. And then Penske came up to me and said, why aren't you working for me? And kept walking. And I go, So I started with Can-Am with them and Trans-Am. And they, you know, they knew that was an advantage.
Sure.
Eventually, so many teams wanted my services that I ended up working for a dozen or more teams. And I found a gentleman in California who could set up monitors. Computers weren't quite in yet, but there was some minor digital
device. Right.
Yeah. So we had monitors. So I ended up with coaxial cables between the pits and putting up monitors for them. And my assistant would look over my shoulder and type in the numbers. And the only thing the computer did or the system did was put them in order, put the times in order so that only people who were paying me for my services would have a monitor and they could see.
Right.
That became way too much work to put all those monitors up, collect them at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So that was sort of the beginning of the end.
Sure.
And I started to think about, you know, maybe I need to do. I had a PR business always at the same time.
Right.
And I was thinking I should probably hang up my stopwatch, and eventually I did.
Right. Well, yeah, sometimes, I mean, my dad was an architect, and when computers came along, he said, no, I'm done. I'm not doing computers. I'm doing the rolling of the pencil, you know. That was his thing, and I get it, you know. Listen, sometimes technology is not always a great thing, although I guess from a standpoint of what racing has become, a multi-billion-dollar business, every little metric counts anymore, and I get that. It's important to know. But, you know, the Formula One teams, I mean, my God, they have a staff of, what, 400 or 500 people working on two race cars.
I know. And can you imagine going from country to country within a week?
No.
It's amazing. Well, it's just beyond, and around the world.
Yeah. I mean, the logistics of hotels and transportation and getting the drivers and all the things that have to happen. It would be hard to do it on a little data sheet, like, you know, the graph paper, like the old days. So one of the things I wanted to talk to you about was your involvement in the Cannonball Run. And did that come from the Madison Avenue Chowder Society, or was there another entree into that, how you got involved in that?
No. I was just a member of the Madison Avenue Sports Car Driving and Chowder Society. I had no involvement with them. No, all my friends were, you know, I was a journalist. I was a writer. I was a publicist at the time. I had my own PR company. And so I was working with all these journalists like Brock Yates, Jim Williams, people at Car and Driver. And I just said, you know, this looks like fun. I should be able to do something like that. And I said, you know what? I'm going to put something together. So I got Mark Donahue helped me with getting Goodyear tires. Roy Woods helped me with money.
Right.
The car came from Bobby Rinsler.
Right.
And he ended up renting the car. He didn't tell me he rented it. And a catalog limousine.
Right.
And just got help from all my, we got the right bra company at the last minute at a cocktail reception where the sponsor I think he was a writer, and his mom owned the Wright Bra Company. So he said, you need to be sponsored by the Wright Bra.
No. Now,
I said, of course we should.
Makes
and
sense.
So I put, and I didn't know Donna Mae Mims personally,
right,
but I knew of her. So I called her and I said, would you like to do this crazy thing? And she says, absolutely.
Oh, how fun. Well, you know, it's to do. Pardon my ignorance. I don't remember the Wright Bra Company. Was that? I know. Tell everybody who's ignorant like me what the Wright Bra Company was. Was it the right bra for the right time, or what was the meaning of that?
I guess so. It was a company that sold bras, and the son of the woman who ran it was a car guy,
right?
And he said, you know, you need to be sponsored by my mom's company.
Right.
And we said, sure. I don't remember how much money they gave us,
right,
but we made decals and we made sure we put it over the right breast,
right,
of our body suits.
The pink?
That I bought pink for Donna Mae. I got pink bell bottoms.
Right.
With the white belt and the pink body suit. And of course, Donna Mae shows up not wearing a bra.
Right. You couldn't tell in the pictures. I couldn't.
Yeah, you can. Most guys see it. But the funny part is she said, I said, you know, Donna Mae, we're sponsored by the Wright Bra Company and not wearing a bra. She says, well, maybe the sponsor's representative has some product on him like they used to do. You know, like STP, usually have a little can of STP.
Sure.
Why not a bra in his pocket? And of course he did not.
Right. Much to his mother's chagrin, right?
We got away with it.
And it was a lot of fun. And I understand Donna Mae rode in the back seat with a helmet on, possibly. Was that?
Of course, yeah. She wouldn't. Yeah, she didn't. She wanted to be sure she was safe in the back seat with her helmet on. Yeah.
And did you all roll the car? Did that really
happen? Yes. Peggy Nemchek, Brad Nemchek's wife, Brad said, "Oh, can you include my wife in it so she could be on the trip as well?" I said, "Sure." So now Donna Mae and I were race car drivers. Peggy was not.
Sure.
So, and she was a little overexcited about doing this trip. So she never quite slept when she should sleep. So she kind of dozed off at the wheel, and I just tapped her, and she panicked and stood on the brake, and we rolled up into the up onto the berm of the highway.
Nice. So,
and this trucker comes by and sees us, and he, I guess, would, I don't know if we had a CB radio. God, yeah. We must have. So, but then the police came, and we were all fine.
Right.
But Donna Mae's report for Brock's book told about how the porta potty that we never used the porta potty.
Right.
So it's all the chemicals were all over Donna Mae in the back.
Thank goodness you never used it. Right.
Right.
So we're ready for a break. We're getting ready to take a break. Can you stay for another segment? I've got a couple of other questions to ask you. That'd be fantastic, Judy. We'll be back with the Classic Auto Mall show in just a minute.
The Classic Auto Mall has more than 1,000 vehicles for consignment in our huge 8-acre climate-controlled showroom. It's a real indoor mall. If you'd like to know all the advantages of buying and selling a car through consignment, the information is available on our website, or you can talk to a classic car specialist who can answer all your questions. It's easy, safe, convenient, and it doesn't matter where you are, we sell worldwide. See our huge selection of classic and collectible vehicles at classicautomall.com.
We're back with the Classic Auto Mall show from the Classic Auto Mall studios in Morgantown, Pennsylvania, with our friend Judy Stropas. And you know, I've learned something very important from this is the number 3 pencil. I didn't realize it had more longevity than the number 2. So I'll make a note of that when I tell my wife to buy pencils for me. I still use pencils too. It's one of those things. So you're due the Cannonball Run. You finish it, you're kind of one and done, right? That was it. You did it one time and you didn't.
Oh, we never finished it, obviously.
Oh, yeah. So where was that? In Texas?
Yeah, in Texas.
And did you hitchhike home or how did you get?
No, I had plenty of money left. So I flew all of us back first class back to New York.
Oh, how funny. Whatever happened to the car? Is it still around? Does anybody know?
Bobby's still in Texas. That was what was funny is Bobby Rinsler is now we call Bobby Rinsler and say, by the way, we crashed the car. He says, oh. So then he admits that he had rented the car. So he calls the rental car company and said, hey, I love that car. I want to buy that car from you. So he purchased the car from the rental car company. I don't know how he did it, but he was a great supporter. I'm so happy that Bobby had done that. But
that's fantastic. And then, of course, the movie came out, and your character or you were loosely based, or the character, what was her name? Adrienne Barbeau was loosely based on you. Is that?
Yes. Yes. I don't know what names we had in the movie, but yes. But they put us in a Lamborghini.
Right.
We had our pink outfits in the movie.
Right.
But there's only 2 of us, I learned. And I wouldn't watch the movie for years and years. And then I saw it on an airplane and I said, okay, I'll watch it. So it was kind of okay. It was interesting.
Yeah. Probably a lot of embellishment, as you do see in all kinds of movies. I would imagine so. But I guess in hindsight, I guess it's one of those things. Were you glad you did it, or would you have not done it in hindsight?
No, I hated every moment of it. It was not fun.
Yeah.
There was never a time when it was fun, except maybe at the reception as we left.
Right. And you left at like 2 o'clock, or did you leave it in the middle of the night, or was it, do you remember?
It was dark, I remember.
Yeah.
And we had this great plan. We were going to make the corner light, you know, as soon as it's green. And of course, we take off and we get there and it's red. So the millisecond of time that we lost.
Yeah, you're counting every millisecond, and the reality of it is it didn't matter, right?
Didn't matter whatsoever.
How funny.
We ended up going, you know, the route around 285, I think it is, Atlanta.
Yeah, oh yeah.
This was when I'm sleeping. So I wake up and I said, I swear I saw that. I think we went past that already. Donna Mae didn't realize, but she kept going around it.
if you had a finish, how many days past everybody else would have taken you?
And I don't know. I have no idea. I would never calculated that. Once we were done, we were done.
You were done. You know, you didn't have your trusty stopwatch with you during that event, right?
Yeah, I wonder if, yeah, I know I did calculations on mileage. The car was, by that time, was really running rough. Something was broken, probably some suspension, and there was no heat in the car. It was really, it was like almost, you know, begging to be rolled over so we could stop.
Did anybody recognize you all or the what you were doing when you were stopping for gas or anything, or people passing you? That's interesting.
No, because it was top secret at that. Nobody knew this was happening.
Wow.
This was totally top secret, the intention of Brock Ace, only to be known after it was completed. But we had decals on the side.
Sure.
We had a woman with a helmet on in the back seat.
That's too funny.
So we were not totally inconspicuous.
Sure, sure. Well, and to go to Atlanta maybe not the most direct route, but I have a feeling you were thinking maybe we can beat the system or miss traffic or who knows what.
And it was supposed to be snowing on the northern route.
Right.
So that's why we thought we'd go down the southern route.
How funny is that? Well, you met some great people in this hobby business of ours over the years. I mean, Mark Donahue, Penske. I mean, Penske saying, come work for me is, you know, couldn't be more poetic words to hear out of his mouth from anybody. Who stands out? Who was the guy that you remember or the person that you remember the most back then? Was Donahue he was an engineer who knew everything about cars. Was he fascinating to be around?
Oh, it was great. These people, mind you, I'm in my 20s. We're all growing up.
Right.
Basically at that time. And the friendships, the camaraderie that we had at that time was unbelievable. And every one of them influenced me in one way or another. Carl Ludvigson, who hired me to work for him and write stories for him, which I didn't do very well on race reports. That's why I don't do those.
Right.
I have to tell you a quick, funny story if there's time.
Yes.
Carl was writing stories for many magazines around the world. He would write them in English and they would translate them. So he had me cover a Watkins Glen 6-hour race. And I wrote the story. I came back. It was sent out all over the world. It was translated. And Hushka von Hunstein, do you remember Hushka von Hunstein from Porsche?
Oh, yes.
He had cheese, as I call him, from Porsche. And he was a good friend of Carl's. And he writes, this is when we're writing letters, Carl. He writes to Carl and said, oh, I saw your article on Watkins Glen. I'm sorry I missed seeing you there, because they were always under his name. And then he says, but once I read your article, I realized that you had not been there. And that was something I wrote. And I said, Carl, I don't want to do that. Anyway, so he was a great influence. He helped me start my PR business with Chevrolet,
sure,
because he had the account first and he had a conflict of interest, so I took it over. People like Hurley Haywood had a great influence on me. He has no idea he has the influence on me. Mark Donahue clearly had great influence on me. Roger Penske. I mean, so many great friends that I've made over the years, and I say I'm very lucky to have been in this business for this long, in this sport, and continue to be in this business, making a living at it. I told a group of old timers that I've been in the business paid for 57 years.
Wow.
So I'm very, very lucky. So many great friends. And once I retired from going to races timing, then I started going. I mean, I always did the PR. People think I hung up my watch and started PR. I always had the PR business from the late 60s. But then I just built that up once I stopped timing. And I just continued that. So then I got into the car collector world, which is where I would have met you.
Sure.
And started to, I have a monthly lunch called Cafe Racers here in Southport, Connecticut. Well, we bring cars, we line them up, we have lunch, we have a good time. And I'm involved. I judge at Concours.
Sure.
I was Grand Marshal at Greenwich Concours. I work with Chattanooga Motor Car Festival. So, so now I'm more into the collector car world than I am in the racing world.
Sure.
But still involved in the racing world.
Sure.
With the Hall of Fame and stuff like that.
Well, and some of the organizations you're involved with, a couple of them, the Piston Foundation, which we were just talking about off the air, is a great organization that provides scholarships and money for kids to learn how to work on classic cars and collector cars and all that good stuff. That what a great organization. I immediately said, this is something we want to be involved in. We've become involved with it. Also coming up is the Cool Cars for Kids at the Philadelphia Concours down at the Simeone. That's exciting.
Right. That's very exciting. It's for a great cause. And they are a great group. And it's a rare concours that is actually run by the beneficiary, by the people at Cool Cars for Kids and Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. They actually are the ones who organize this event. And we've gotten Simeone involved. Simeone, they were only renting the space to have the concours early on, but then we got Harry Hurst involved. So we ended up getting Simeone involved in the event as well. And Mike Tilson's the chief judge and gathers up the cars. So we're featuring Jaguar. So the panel discussion coming up, we'll have Chip Robinson, who drove for Group 44.
Yeah.
Dean Cassano, who's a great car restorer and collector here in Connecticut. Mike Dale, who used to be the president of Jaguar North America, who got the company involved in motorsports with Group 44.
Wow.
And on video, we'll have Tony Dow, who was with Tom Walkinshaw Racing back then. Bob Tullius, who's still going strong at 90-something.
Didn't realize that.
Yes, and then the author of a book on Tom Walkinshaw Racing Jaguars, Neil Smith.
Right.
So the last three are on video. The first three will be on the panel discussion with Harry Hurst being the MC. So it's going to be a great panel discussion on Jack.
And we've got Harry coming up on the podcast in 2 weeks. And in 3 weeks, Dr. Ian Krantz, who is the head guy of, I guess, Cool Cars for Kids and a car guy himself, thank goodness.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I love to see car guys that are in different fields of work. You know, all of us think everybody that does this is all works in classic car world. No, other people have real jobs that like doctors and lawyers and Dr. Simeone, who was one of the most respected brain surgeons, I guess, in the world. And but it's nice to see that that people that truly care about cars, and they're not just using cars as a platform because it's popular, that they're actually doing it because they have a passion and a love affair. And that comes through with people like that. And it's so important, I think, to have that kind of involvement, because we have to continue this hobby.
Yes. Yes. And that's why when I do the interviews of the Piston Foundation, the scholars, I do blogs, I interview them, and then I write a blog about them. I am fascinated by the fact that most of these young people, they're only in their 20s now, knew that they wanted to work on cars early on.
Sure.
And like one gal, she was great. I think she's a graduate already, but when she was a kid, she used to take apart her mother's pens and try to put them back together again. She just liked taking them apart. Then she came upon a Volkswagen Beetle and said, oh my God, what a cool car. So she started to take that apart and put it back together again. And so she was a McPherson College student, and she studied car restoration and was really into it. They know early on that this is what they want to do.
Sure. And there haven't been very many avenues for people like that, because we got rid of a lot of shop class and things like that in high schools, and they didn't have an outlet for it.
Right. I'm totally in awe of every student that I have interviewed for this.
Well, everything I've read about any of them is fascinating, and certainly think that it's a very worthy cause, obviously, and something that if we want this to go, you know, far past what we've contributed to it, we hope that we've contributed something, that it will continue and the hobby will thrive. And as long as they just don't outlaw that gasoline.
Well, I don't know. You hear the stories now of all those electric cars are sitting in the dealership lots, not being sold. Am I right?
Yeah. Bob Lutz just was on record as saying the other day, the guy used to run Chrysler, who said, you know, I think we tried to force this down people's throats and it didn't work. And so we'll see. I'm not an advocate of pure electric cars. I think a hybrid may be okay for, you know, certain things.
I agree with the hybrid. Totally. I think hybrid makes a lot of sense.
Absolutely. Judy, thank you.
The Prius had it all along.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Thanks so much for being on the show. We really appreciate it. And I'm sure we'll see you in Philly coming up the Conqueror in about 3 weeks or so.
I'll see you there. Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Judy. Bye-bye. We'll be back with the Classic Auto Mall show in just a couple of minutes.
The Classic Auto Mall is like going to the greatest indoor car showroom in the country. With more than 1,000 classic and collectible vehicles for sale via consignment in our 8-acre climate-controlled showroom, we've got something for everyone. We're open to the public most days. Plus, you can easily search our inventory online at classicautomall.com. Buying and selling via consignment is safe, easy, and secure. Plus, we advertise, sell, and ship worldwide. Find your dream classic vehicle at classicautomall.com.
Back with the Classic Auto Mall show from the Classic Auto Mall studio in Morgantown, Pennsylvania. What a great guest she was.
Oh, yeah.
I got, as usual, I have 27 pages, of which 24 didn't get used.
Yeah.
So many fascinating things.
57 years, is that what you said? Yeah. He's been in the business?
And time in 40 cars at a time.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
I don't know.
For 24 hours or even 12 hours at Sebring, which would be like 20 cars, she said, but still, it's an amazing.
If they're going by at 110 miles an hour and you time them and there's six of them together, how do you keep that straight?
The first one and the last one, and you estimate the in between.
Oh, okay.
So it would be not a 100% exact science, but it'd be pretty damn close.
Mm-hmm.
And she would estimate. So if car one went at 101 and car six went at 104, then in between she would know what order they were in.
Okay.
She would just kind of fill in the tenths as she went, kind of like the horse race, the Kentucky Derby, by a nose. You know?
Yeah.
And didn't drink because any liquids, because that way she didn't have to go to the bathroom.
Oh, okay.
But a lot of fruit.
I miss that. Yeah,
food and all those good things. What a life well lived and still living.
Yeah.
You know, still doing the PR stuff or Zach Brown. Well, you know, Zach Brown, we were talking off air about other people we'd like to have on, and she knows everybody.
Right. Yeah. You know?
So if anybody can get anybody, it's going to be her.
That's incredible.
She's going to be the one. But Zach Brown, I imagine he'd be a tough get.
It's a race, the racer, right?
No. Zach Brown, the CEO of McLaren.
Oh, the CEO of McLaren. I'm sorry. I knew there was another famous Zach Brown.
Well, there's Zach Brown, the country music
singer,
artist, singer, the singer.
He'd be good to have, too.
I'd love to have him. You know me, I'm Mr. Music. So some of our new arrivals this week, wow, we got some really cool stuff in. It just seems like every week we get cooler and cooler stuff. And this one is really interesting because it's affordable, and it's daily driver-esque, and it's a 2005 Volkswagen Beetle GL convertible, Galactic Blue Metallic, love that name, over tan. It's only got 51,000 original miles. I mean, that car's almost 20 years old. 20 model years is pretty soon coming up, right?
Yeah.
2.0 liter EFI inline four. This car was garage kept, well kept and maintained. It's got nice leather seating. Of course, the Beetle came back and was a home run out of the gate again. Well, isn't it amazing? The iconicness of the Beetle, be it the old version that came out in 1954 or 55, and through the ones, they stopped making them in 79? Was that somewhere in there? I think it was. And then they started back, and they were popular out of the gate when they started back. Isn't it funny how Volkswagen Beetles have that connection with people?
Absolutely. I mean, it's the most unique shape. I mean, there's nothing like it. There's nothing like it.
You know? And of course, a lot of Porsche influence on Volkswagen. And of course, Ferdinand Porsche worked for Volkswagen back in the day. So
that's right.
Anyway, if you get a chance, check that out. And again, affordable daily driver. So if you think Classic Auto Mall, you don't always think of the fact that there might be something here that you could buy instead of buying something off whatever dealer lot. That you could buy that you could use on a daily basis.
Yeah, and VW Beetles can go either way. It's kind of a classic, and it's and you can use it as a daily driver.
And the ones that, when they come out, they're classic. They're cool from day one. So, and the new van that they've got coming out is really cool looking.
Yeah, that's
although
wild.
It's an EV, so what's going to happen with that? We don't know. Maybe they'll hybrid it or something. I don't know. Is hybrided it? Is that a plural
it is
hybrid?
Now.
I guess, and we'll make it that way. How about the 1977 Chrysler Cordoba.
Cordoba.
Corinthian leather. 11,000 actual miles.
Somebody put it away.
Somebody put it away and didn't ride it hard and put it away wet. Got the 400 V8, the A727 torque flight automatic. Very original car. I mean, this is very unusual because a lot of these cars from the 70s, and we've talked about this, they rusted out. They weren't built as well as, you know, the steel wasn't as well treated or whatever it is they do or they did in later years. And so these things just didn't last.
Yeah, there wasn't undercoating like there is.
Right. Now, and they just, they weren't designed to last. They were more throwaway, I think, than they are now. You know, you got cars, it's like flat screen TVs. They say they only last a couple of years now. I've had mine for 6 years.
Right.
Well, what the heck?
That's right.
Somebody's lying.
Everything's built to not last now, whereas back in the day,
it
kind of was, except for cars, which were subject to salt and rain and water and all that stuff.
Well, why do you think Duracell doesn't make rechargeable batteries? You know, they do, but they didn't. It didn't go over very well. I wonder why that is.
Yeah.
Because they didn't want it. It's like the 200-mile-per-gallon carburetor. Remember that? Supposedly the guy who created or invented a carburetor that would get 200 miles per gallon. Was never seen or found.
Oh, the guy was never
guy,
seen or found.
The inventor.
I have that problem with windshield wipers because unless you get the silicone ones, they're good for about 3 days and then you got to replace them.
You know where you got to get windshield wipers? And I'm sure this is by design. You got to get them at the manufacturer. You know, if you go to Chevrolet and get windshield wipers, they are way better than the ones you buy anywhere else. And I'm not downplaying the others. It's just they're terrible. They don't do what they're supposed
disposable,
to do. They're very, very disposable. Yeah. But 3 days is maybe pushing the disposable.
A couple months in the sun and they're done. They're done.
You know? All that rubber and all that.
Yeah.
I mean, but if you go to any of the, you know, Lexus or Mercedes or Porsche and you get your windshield wipers changed there, they seem to be better. So for whatever reason.
Probably.
So. Try to get off my high horse there. Next new arrival is the 2003 Chevrolet Monte Carlo SS Coupe Jeff Gordon edition. By golly.
It is the Jeff Gordon edition.
I know. That's what I just said.
I didn't even know this thing existed till I wrote this up. But it's pretty cool, actually.
Two owners. Yeah. One of 2400s. Got the original window sticker. I mean, it's nearly new. It's 6,500 miles. The title reads exempt because, unfortunately, somebody at one of the local, not even the local, could have been anywhere in the country, one of the DMVs, said, over 10 years old, exempt. And be careful with that. We talk about this on the show. If you've got a low-mileage car, it's important for that paper trail to remain the low mileage on it. And even when you go and have your car serviced, especially with low mileage, and you're at a Pennzoil quick change oil place, look at the mileage that they put on your receipt and make sure it's right. And if it's not, make sure they change it. Because if they don't, that goes to Carfax. And all of a sudden, there's a mileage discrepancy because they said, there's no way this has only got 9,000 miles. It's 109.
Right.
You know, so you got to check that. Make sure that you look at that receipt when you have your car serviced, even at your dealership. Because if they put the wrong mileage on there, it's going to haunt that car because now there's going to be a mileage discrepancy on the Carfax or the auto check. And it's hard to fix.
Yep.
Very, very difficult. So this has got 6,500 miles. You know, they made a Dale Earnhardt edition, a Tony Stewart edition. I mean, this one, the Jeff Gordon edition. I don't think that they are as collectible now as they were when they kind of first came out. They were one of those ones that I think a lot of people thought instant collectible, like we talked about a couple of weeks ago, the 76 Cadillac Eldorado, the 78 Indy Pace Car Corvette, the black and silver. I think a lot of people thought, you know, these things are going to be really collectible.
Yeah, so or they were just like hardcore NASCAR fans, which can be rabid, you know, and they're Jeff Gordon fans, and that's their man. I got to have that car.
If Jeff Gordon says you use Tide detergent, by God, you use Tide detergent, and you don't,
that's right.
You don't sway. But what an interesting car. And it's really pretty with the blue and silver over the ebony interior. Another new arrival is the 59 Chevrolet Apache 3100 pickup. Now, this thing looks stock, but it's got a 5.7 liter LT1 V8, the 4L60E automatic transmission, heat and air, Mustang 2 front front end. I mean, this thing is cool. Mm-hmm. This is really
well done.
These
are really neat.
And they're good-looking trucks. They really are. You talk about, if you wanted to see 50s pickup truck, a Chevrolet Apache would be the one that you would just picture in your mind. Mm-hmm. And of course, when you saw it, you say, oh, I pictured the right one. The 1933 Chrysler Imperial 8 Series CQ Coupe. Guess what? Another resto mod. Mm-hmm. This one's got a 350 cubic inch V8, which you look at this car and you would not picture this as a resto mod, right?
Right.
You would just say, oh, that looks like a 1933 Chrysler. Mm-hmm. That's what a pretty car. And again, it's got one of the features that you and I have talked about and we seem to like more and more. It doesn't have the dual side mounts, which gives it a more sleek look from the fenders. You kind of lose that sleek fender flow, if you will, when those dual side mounts are mounted there. And they were mounted there from a practicality reason.
Sure.
Because you blew tires all the time.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, you're just driving down the road, pow, there goes your tire. The
roads were rougher back then.
And there wasn't a place to get it fixed.
Right.
So what did you do? You know, you carried two spares, or they even stacked them two on the back well, too. So
yeah,
you
yeah.
have two instead of the trunk in the back.
Mm-hmm.
But this one's got a 700 R4 automatic, beautifully applied paint, again, heat and air. A real classic-looking car with a resto.
You would never know.
No, with a modern reliability. So check that one out. All these can be checked out on our website, classicautomall.com. Last but not least, the 74 BMW 2002 TII, Inca Orange over black, 2-liter four-cylinder. It's got the Ray Corman engine upgrades, which is a well-known tuner that does a lot of upgrades to the BMW 2002s. And these things, you talk about iconic. I mean, these are as iconic as they get, and especially in orange. That color is just really sets them apart from any other car that you see on the road. That's what people love about them. They're odd looking in a way,
sure,
but kind of in a good way. Odd.
Oh yeah,
you know, they
have such an incredible fan base and enthusiast group.
Sure,
I mean, you're not alone if you buy this thing.
No. And like an AMC Pacer, you know, there are AMC Gremlin or whatever. Yeah, they're oddball, but they have their charm to them. Kind of the same with the BMW 2002. If you took it for face value and looked at it, you'd say, yeah, that's kind of an odd-looking car.
Right.
You wouldn't really think much about it being a sports car or no different than the Datsun 510, which is just a box.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like a box, but it is cool in a boxy sort of way.
Yeah, exactly. You know? And these things, and like I said in the write-up, my friend who's a BMW fanatic said, if you've never driven one,
right,
then you can't really, you don't know.
Miata, we talked about that.
Yeah.
That's the same thing.
Yep.
If you've never driven a Miata, don't look
judge.
Down your nose. Don't you judge. Don't you come judging over here. Because they're great cars, and they're just, you know, they're not designed to be the fastest car on the road. That's not what they were ever designed to be. Although these 2002s, they had a turbo version in the 2002s, or 2002. I don't know how the BMW.
Yeah, 2002, yeah.
But the aficionados, do they have an insider? Do they do the 2002 or is it 2002?
I think it's 2002.
If you're a cool Porsche guy, you do, instead of 911, you go to the 911.
Yeah, 993, 996.
And then the 911 for 911, 997, if you know.
That's right.
The internal nomenclature. And then there's ones like the BMW guys who they'll replace an engine in an older BMW with a newer model engine. They won't say a 1989 BMW M3 engine. They'll say M-61273. And it's like, you're supposed to know what that means.
All those guys know the engine codes.
They know it immediately.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and Mercedes is the same way. They have some weird internal numbering system and letters and all that. By the way, I've noticed my shirt is kind of
on camera. If you're seeing this on YouTube, it glitters.
It's like when you watch the Johnny Carson show and some guy came out in a really festive jacket.
Yeah,
it would just be glittering and the eye. I'm noticing it now. So now I'm distracted by my own shirt.
By your own glitter.
But anyway, some of the new inventory is just fascinating that we get in here, and we have so much to talk about every week, and it's hard to pick and choose six to talk about.
Never ends. I mean, you'll have content for the next 10 years.
we could and we could go back and talk about stuff that's been here a while that we've forgotten about that's really cool. And
yeah,
we just got a couple of really new consignments in today that we'll talk about next week. A clone AAR 446 back car,
saw it,
and a 62 Roadster Corvette, which is really cool. And these are kind of been put away for a little while, so there's some work left to be done on them, but not too much. I love cars like that the next person can kind of take it to the next level. For whatever reason, people don't always get to finish cars like they thought, or or they lose interest, or they find something else that they like. You just never know. But I think that when we see the level of enthusiasm for cars like the AAR CUDA, like the 62 Corvette, it's absolutely amazing. So thanks again for joining us on the Classic Auto Mall show. And we'll see you next week with a special guest to be determined. We'll catch you then.
You've been listening to the Classic Auto Mall show with your host, Stuart Howden. Executive producer, Steve Saphir. Produced and engineered by yours truly, J.R. Russ. Available on ClassicAutoMall.com, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. Questions, answers, or comments? Write us at ClassicAutoMall.com. And if you want to talk about buying a classic car seen on our website, you're looking for a particular vehicle, or want to consign your classic for sale, write us at info@ClassicAutoMall.com or call and talk to a real live classic car specialist at 888-227-0914. That's 888-227-0914. Music courtesy of the Pat Travers Band. For tour dates, contact, and stuff, visit pattravers.com. Produced by Car Smarts Media. Copyright all rights reserved.